Hey, everybody, Pro Bowl's here. An awesome Pro Bowl starts with awesome players, and your vote helps decide which of those awesome players gets a spot on the AFC and or the NFC roster. So show your love, cast your vote, and make sure your favorite players make it to the 2020 Pro Bowl. Vote today and be entered to win exclusive prizes at NFL.com/Pro Bowl vote. And, you know, now that we're on the subject of football, let's start the show.
Broncos in the nickel, third and 10.
What is that?
Blocked by Singletary, and it's caught for a touchdown. Cole Beasley, he beat Devontae Harris. 18-yard touchdown pass.
David, football David.
The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello and happy Thanksgiving, football fans. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program, presented as always by Zaxby's, the home of the famous chicken fingers, wings, and salads. Go get you some, a good primer for eating poultry on Turkey Day. Go eat some delicious chicken, and I recommend the wings. Spaghetti loves the salads. You can't go wrong over there, and you couldn't go wrong if you were watching pro football, especially if you love defense. Actually, scratch that. After Week 11, where it felt like defense ruled the entire weekend, I think that Week 12 had something for everybody, some shootouts and some defensive struggles. And what emerged from that as we await the Monday night game at the time of this recording, the Ravens playing the Rams here in Los Angeles at the Coliseum, is the Dallas Cowboys, the state of America's team. Before the game, if you missed it somehow, they were talking about, or there were rumors floating around, that the so-called mutual interest exists between Jason Garrett and the New York Giants, which I guess means Eddie Spaghetti back there behind the glass, that the Giants are going to move on from Pat Shurmur. Obviously, that's a pretty simple math to do. And the Cowboys, despite being in first place, seem ready to move on from Jason Garrett, even more so after the game in Foxborough. I mean, for a team that is in first place and lost the game by four to the defending world champs, a little surprising of how harsh Jerry Jones was on that. Then again, if you watch the game, it did have one of those games that you felt like, boy, Belichick is just outsmarting the other sideline, and that's the reason that the Patriots are winning. The other thing that emerges from it is a lot of skepticism about how far Tom Brady can take this Patriots team. But of course, with that defense and with Bill Belichick, this is, if you believed in the 2015 Denver Broncos with Peyton Manning, surely you see that Tom Brady is superior to, I mean, I know that's damning with faint praise where Peyton was at that point in his career. I still think that Tom Brady has more than enough to take down the rest of the AFC. They would still be my pick, and they still are my pick, to get to the Super Bowl at this point. How say you, Eddie Spaghetti?
I think right now it's the Ravens conference to lose. I think tonight's game will be very interesting to see them play the Rams on the road. You know, the Rams still have some pieces, but right now it's going to be hard for me to pick against the Ravens in any matchup until I see Lamar stop and shut down. It's hard. It's just one of those things. I don't know why I have it in my head that if you're a mobile quarterback who could run the ball when he needs to run, but could still pass the ball and destroy you with the pass, plus they have a really good running game, it's like I'm not going to pick against that team. The defense is doing its job as well. So right now, until I see that shutdown, maybe in consecutive weeks, I could say, okay, there's a problem. On the flip side, with the Patriots, is like they're showing a little bit of openings of what their flaws are as well. Tom Brady is not having a great season. You know, they N'Keal Harry in his second game in his career did have a nice touchdown catch, so he could be a threat. But you know, their defense is as good as it is, but when your offense is barely scraping by 17 points, like 20 points in that range, it's, you know, you could get beat by a dangerous offensive team.
I guess so, but it is something that we've pointed at all season long. This is the year of the defense. It was fairly predictable, in fact, even with all the rules that favor offense, that in the never-ending push and pull of NFL offenses and those coordinators versus defense and those coordinators, that this was the year that the defense would rise back up, playing off of what we saw the Patriots do in the Super Bowl to the Rams. The defense won that one, and this year it feels like more often than not the good defenses are winning. And in fact, it doesn't just feel that way. That is the case. The best teams in football right now, the teams that have the number one seeds on both sides of things, like, again, I know I'm patting myself on the back for saying this, but you could see this coming, And that's why I had the Niners winning their division. We'll see if they have enough to hold on with a really brutal schedule upcoming. But still, the reason that they're winning games, the consistent threat, at least for these Niners, has been that defense. And now here comes Jimmy G in that offense. And again, like we foretold, those pass catchers, the young ones tend to take. They don't hit the ground running. Jerry Rice, I know this is ancient history to a lot of people out there, but Jerry Rice, even Jerry Rice, did not splash in week one. He did not make it big in September. At the very end of his rookie season, that's when he kind of took off. And now you see Deebo Samuel starting to make some contributions. And not coincidentally, George Kittle's out there to distract those defenses, and so is Emmanuel Sanders. These Niners are legit in my book. And the thing I keep thinking about them is, how many big-time wins have they had? People keep wanting to express skepticism about where this team is going. I wonder how many big-time games they have to have. Their only stumble was without George Kittle, the all-pro tight end. So you remove him from the equation, it's understandable that they would lose that one. And they still just about won the game against the Seahawks, were it not for that missed kick. But in the meantime, when they took down, remember when they housed the Browns? Yeah. Everybody swooned over that one. Then they whipped the Rams in L.A., and people went crazy over that one. They vanquished now the Packers with a dominant performance last night at the time of this recording. They whipped that team. So I don't think the Niners are some mirage as we head into December here. What else, Spaghetti? What else jumped out at you from week 12? And this gathering storm, I guess the thing that people are talking about is the two teams that played in Foxborough, Tom Brady's health. You know, as I just explained why, I think that I see it. I obviously get it. And the Cowboys thing is interesting because they do feel like they're underachieving a little bit, but they're in first place. And I had the Eagles winning the division. But if you look at how things shape up for the Eagles, the way Carson Wentz with the bad hand now, if the Cowboys just straight up, they play the Bills still, the Cowboys have another tough one beyond that.
The Cowboys have the Bills on Thanksgiving.
And the Ravens.
They're on the road versus the Bears. They have their home versus the Rams. And then they have to go to the Philadelphia for the Eagles. And they have the last game of the season.
Oh, I thought they had the Ravens in there, too. Okay, I'm sorry. I forget that. So basically, that division is going to boil down to, and actually, that's even optimistic for the Eagles at this point. But let's say that the Bills on Thanksgiving go into Dallas and take them down. Or they stumble in Chicago or something like that. Then the Eagles, if they win the head-to-head. But the Eagles now, it's almost essential that the Eagles win that game if they have a shot at winning the division. And the way things are shaping up on the NFC side, it's their only shot at the postseason, too. And then the curse is supposed to will have claimed one Carson Wentz. We saw before the season, he gets all that money. He was supposed to step right in for Nick Foles. And if Nick Foles could do it, the logic went, then surely the second overall pick, the more talented quarterback, would fly in 2019. So far, not so good. And they're tracking to miss the playoffs unless, at minimum, they go down to Dallas in a couple of weeks and vanquish that team.
Yeah, that Eagles-Seahawks game was a weird one. I know, like, Brennan Brooks missed it for, like mental health reasons, or he came out of the game. Like, Wentz with the injury, he's not looking right. The receivers all year have been miserable. There are some reports that Carson Wentz and Alshon Jeffrey do not mesh well whatsoever. There's no rapport between them, which is, you don't want to hear that. Obviously, everyone's been saying since last year, the ball gets forced to Zach Ertz, whether that's right or wrong. You know, they can't decide on a running back. It's just, there's a lot of issue with that team. Whereas Dallas, I think on paper, maybe outside of their secondary, you could argue at like every level, they're as good as you could possibly be. You know, obviously Zeke, Dak's MVP type player this year. The receivers are great with Amari Cooper. Randall Cobb, you know, when he has played, he's actually stepped up. He had a decent game yesterday when Amari Cooper was shut down by Stephon Gilmore. The offensive line obviously has some absolute studs there. Defensive line, same thing. Linebackers, really good young core. Plus, you have Sean Lee, the veteran. So it's like that team makes sense as to why they should win the division. But even though they're complete on paper, they just never put it together on the field consistently. And now, is that an issue of Jason Garrett, or is that an issue of, I don't know what else it could be. Maybe the talent, maybe they're not as good as we perceive them to be.
Well, but they're loaded.
They are.
And it's funny because if they lose to the Bills and the way the Bills are playing,
which is possible,
that was a pro football team that the Bills hosted on Sunday. and they the defense just completely shut them down. And the way Josh Allen's looking, and here comes Devin Singletary and the rest of it. The cynic would point to Smoke Brown being their one good pass catcher that they have, but look through it. The teams that make hay in the postseason do not have a high-end wide receiver. That's sure. not a reason to doubt them. And Josh Allen is starting to erase a lot of the skeptics out there right now. And I wonder if they beat – this is a big one. My confidence that the Cowboys – and we'll pick it on Wednesday with scheduling alert for you. We'll do our usual Wednesday show on the start of Shecker season. That's on the eve of Thanksgiving annually. So we'll pick those games with Cole Wright and Handsome Hank, Matt Money Smith out and about with the family in town. We'll do our picks for the Thanksgiving games and all of and week 13 coming up. Obviously, if the Bills go down to Dallas, does Jason Garrett make it through the year? The way Jerry Jones is talking about him, I don't know what.
This is a classic. To me, it's a game, and the Bills are, they could very easily get on there and win that game. They could win that game by, I think, multiple scores, too. But I have this in my head for some reason that the Cowboys with Jason Garrett, they find a way where they get, they're down in the dumps and Jerry Jones will make some comment and, the local stations or whatever, and then they'll find a way to win and squeak out that game, and they just let Jason Garrett
hang on.
He's
the T-1000, man. You cannot do anything to stamp him out fully. If you think you've broken him into a million pieces, he'll reform when the floor heats up and he'll reconnect and take a new shape. What do you think, though, Spaghetti, about so given that, and that's exactly what I think the Cowboys, my expectation is that the Cowboys will right the ship that isn't really that wrong to begin with, and they will win at home. Mm-hmm. Because Jason Garrett has been, it's felt like we've seen this scene, as opposed to Steinbrenner, Billy Martin back in the day. I don't know if you know those names. I know you're a Yankees fan.
I'm familiar,
You're a young man, and you don't care about anything that happened pre-96.
I enjoy the Yankees' deep history, yeah.
So it's like that those two, that there feels like there's this undercurrent of strife, except the big difference is that Jerry Jones never does fire Jason Garrett, and Jason Garrett ends up saving his job every time. So that's my expectation this time around. But if they lose that game, it's going to get ugly, and they're in first place.
I know.
And no matter what the Eagles do, they're still in first place because they have the head-to-head against them.
Right.
And yet it'll feel like the sky is falling in Big D.
I do think it's a tough environment on Thanksgiving Day, which is, what the Cowboys always play, and you're the Bills, you have to go into their environment where they are the division leader, and they can extend that lead, and that Jason Garrett, for the first real time, is playing for his job. And this is still one of the more talented Cowboys teams we've seen in quite some time. If you're going to match up the players, you're going to take Amari Cooper over Cole Beasley, which actually would be a pretty funny revenge game if Cole Beasley has a monster game for the Bills. But I could just see it being one of those, like Zeke was for 100, Amari Cooper wakes up. I could see Josh Allen maybe letting a ball sail or two balls sail and a couple interceptions. I don't know. I'm going to go with Dallas in this one because I just think they just are used to this situation where the Bills, they're a younger team. This is something they're not used to in this environment. But, if the Bills go in there and win by 10 points, Jerry Jones will fire Jason Garrett on the spot, and he will have to leave the stadium with security or something.
Well, good news. He has a soft landing spot up in the tri-state area Spaghetti?
I cannot care.
Jason Garrett?
It's like, what is the connection that he was a backup quarterback 30 years ago or something? Like, I don't get...
It does feel awfully uninspired before... before you even put out feelers for the big names in college football and otherwise, that you would just resolve to hire Jason Garrett.
There are guys in the pro ranks who make a lot more sense than Jason Garrett. And then, to go back to all the way to the Coughlin era, when you're replacing Coughlin, who is a legend, who is arguably one of the, besides Parcells, probably the next best coach in the Giants history, and you're going to go and bring in Ben McAdoo, it's like, okay, I get it. He coached Aaron Rodgers and the offense looked great with him. We'll see what happens. He's never had a crack at a head coaching job. He did make the playoffs one year. It didn't really pan out. Then you go and hire Shermer, who failed with, a few teams failed with Cleveland, but they said, no, he's good with quarterbacks and we're going to, win the transition from Eli to the next guy. And then that's not working out either. So it's like, why bring in a retread, a guy that was just day in, day out, just killed by Dallas media. It seems like he has no relationship with any of his players. They don't respect him. And it's like, to bring him in here when you have a great young core, I don't know. I think it's smart to go with a younger option on the college ranks. If you want, I think maybe they need a big name. That's what the Giants only care about. It's like this weird thing that these
But this would be, there's
have.
A reason why when you people always say, oh, well, that show, actually, you see it a little bit more in the 21st century, but in network TV, when a big show gets canceled, you think, oh, well, why doesn't another network just grab that show? Because it has a stink on it. It wasn't sure. good enough for somewhere else, but now we're going to pick it up. It has a weird message. The Giants are going to go get the Dallas Cowboys head coach, the guy who's never been to a Super Bowl
Plus
or anything.
Plus his rival. It makes no sense.
It'd be weird.
But they'll sell it as that he was a Giant, and they want to keep it in family, and it's just this weird thing these old-school franchises want to always do. And it's like, to me, I could think five off the top of my head coaches I'd rather have than him. But I actually don't think they'll fire Shermer this year. I think they're going
to maybe not. But it is another example, and in fact, one of our chief examples over the last decade here of doing this show, that certain guys, why this is true, you can debate the nuance of it. Belichick is the anomaly in that he is the leader of men, but also down in the nitty gritty of the game plan. Generally speaking, a guy is either a leader of men or a technician or what else, and his coordinators cede that control to him. But coordinators, Shermer might be one of those guys who's a classic great coordinator who's not a leader of men. I'm not trying to diminish him as a human being, but it's starting to shape up that he's the opposite of Herm Edwards, as an example. Herm Edwards is probably not a great coordinator, but walks into a room, he can oversee, he's a manager of, he's the foreman kind of vibe down at Arizona State, and prior to that, obviously, in the NFL. So yeah, I don't get that. Now, before we move on, well, a couple other things I want to kibitz about here, and one of them is back to Tom Brady, and people got upset with me in the New England area, specifically Spaghetti, because this doesn't apply just to the Patriots, but I'm not talking about a good player moving on. You're a Giants guy. I'm not talking about what happens when Eli moves on, but you did feel that dynamic a year ago when they sat him down for Geno Smith, and New York sports fans went crazy, disrespectful, so on and so forth. How dare you attempt to move on while we have this this legend, this icon in New York sports right there? He deserves better than that. So I floated what happens in 2020 as things track in my book to Tom Brady not being on the Patriots next year. And let's say hypothetically he isn't. I don't know what's going to happen with Brady, but it feels that way to me. And maybe I'll be proven wrong. But OK, just for fun sake. And by the way, hard-boiled people who don't want sports to be fun or for spectators to be allowed to debate these things barroom debate style. I don't know where your sense of fun comes from. Talking about politics? I don't know what you enjoy. This is supposed to be a fun diversion for us, so there's no reason to get so angry about such things. But I floated the hypothetical, what if Brady moves on and the Patriots go 13? What if they go and get Andy Dalton to be the replacement, and Andy Dalton takes over and goes 13-3 and wins the Super Bowl? Matter of fact, what if it's Jared Stidham and he goes 13-3 and wins the Super Bowl? Won't there be a part of you as a Patriots fan that feels like, huh, Tom, I guess Tom wasn't the essential item, and it was Belichick who was the more essential figure in this Patriots run. And as a result, then you're cheering for a coach. You're not cheering for laundry, as Jerry Seinfeld joked about, but you're cheering for, like, see, it's the coach that makes all the difference. And to me, that's vaguely unsatisfying, especially if Tom Brady doesn't go off into the sunset. If Tom Brady says, the Patriots may not think I have something left, but I want to play another season, and now I'm going to go play for the Los Angeles Chargers, as an example. What then? What if the Patriots, with Andy Dalton or Jared Stidham, in the playoffs, what if they went to the title game in the AFC and awaiting them were the Los Angeles Chargers, helmed by their quarterback, Tom Brady? Doesn't that raise, obviously that's an on-the-nose hypothetical, but wouldn't that raise some conflicted emotions in the football fan?
I think there definitely are. He's a weird case because there definitely are some people who are like Tom Brady fans, and they want to see Tom Brady do well, and they don't really care about Belichick or
those aren't weird fans. I submit that younger fans, 21st century sports fans, the marketing analysts and otherwise will tell you that fans, young fans, care more about stars than they do team brands. So that makes perfect sense to me. If you grew up and all you've ever known is not just the Patriots, but you know the Tom Brady Patriots, I can absolutely see being kind of at best disinterested and at worst saying like, I hope Tom beats those Patriots.
I mean, the NBA, I would say that definitely, like, it's a star-driven league. Maybe if you're a casual hockey fan, you want to flock to the, you know, the Sidney Crosby's Penguins, or because he's a name brand. But from my little experience just living up in Boston for, you know, better part of, like, 4 to 6 years from college, is, like, I think Patriots fans, the diehard Patriots fans, love the arrogance and being like, we're smarter than you, we're always better than you. And I think that's kind of tied into Belichick and just, like, the brand of Patriots football. Whereas, like, if Tom Brady left, or let's just say he retires, and they go and get either it's Stidham or it's whoever else on the open market, they draft a guy and they go and win, they would absolutely love to say, wow, we move on from Tom Brady and we're still the best team. We're still better than you. We're always going to be better than you. We draft better than you. We coach better than you. I think they just like that arrogance of always being the upper class and no one's on their level. That being said, with like the Patriots, the best example I could give and like where I'm coming from is like, say, Derek Jeter for me as a Yankee. Yankees fan, Derek Jeter moves on, but they go and replace him. They have Didi Gregorius, and you have probably now Gleyber Torres is going to move over to shortstop. It's like, well, I cried this year when they lost the Astros because I care about the laundry, like you were saying. Like, I care about the interlocking NY pinstripes, but I want to see the team win. Now, it doesn't take away from me loving Derek Jeter and what he's accomplished for us and being just the face of the franchise for 2 decades, but I'm not going to stop rooting for my baseball team because Derek Jeter is now living
in his
mansion.
I don't mean stop rooting for it, but lose a little bit of excitement for it. That's what happened to me as a Mario Lemieux fan when he retired.
Wouldn't the excitement raise, though? If you say if you're on a 13-3 run with Andy Dalton, you're like, wow, we could do this again without Brady. Wouldn't you be more excited? Like, they're probably,
I don't know. If you have a 12 jersey and it's become, and you are standing for 12 as the GOAT all these years, now all of a sudden he's gone and they keep on rolling, it would create some conflicted emotions. And a lot of people in New England, when I tweeted that out over the weekend, said, did it hurt Joe Montana when Steve Young took over and kept on going? No, it didn't. It burnished Montana's legacy because Steve Young continued to play. The Niners continued to be great, except in January, they would come up short. And it seemed like Steve Young got by the pressure of having to take over for Joe Montana until he finally did get over the hump. 3 years into the gig, then he remember him figuratively taking the monkey off his back at the end of that Super Bowl win against the Chargers. I think that, so that's not a perfect comparison for my hypothetical, a completely made up nonsense, but it's fun to talk about that. It's sort of the Rick Pitino, actually, to keep in Boston sports, Rick Pitino famously, hey, Kevin McHale and Larry Bird and the Chief ain't walking through that door right now. I kind of feel like I'm willing to trade. I know this is crazy. I kind of understand, like, oh, it's a business, got to move on. Yeah, that's those are the guys running the business are in that frame of mind. But you are, as a fan, you're not required to embrace that. You're allowed to sort of say, I don't care. If Tom Brady wants to play again next year, we owe it to him to let him play until he decides he wants to walk away and he's our starting QB. Or shame the devil. That was basically the sentiment with Giants fans a year ago. Well, Eli, he deserves better than this. Yeah, but shouldn't we see if Geno Smith or whomever is ready to do
something
with it?
I agree in the sense.
That's what I'm kind of getting.
Starting Geno is probably the wrong thing because Geno had his shot with the Jets and he didn't pan out. I think people last year were mad that it wasn't was it Kyle Lauletta, who was the rookie? They wanted to see a young guy to see if he could replace Eli. I think that's why there were a lot of Giants fans rooting against Geno Smith, and that's why they didn't. You know, every fan turned on McAdoo and Jerry Reese because of that. But I mean, Tom Brady has the right to say when he's I'm done. When I say I'm done, and the Patriots should probably let him alone because what he did for that franchise. But I think if you still ultimately side with Brady over the Patriots, I'm not sure I would consider you a real Patriots fan. You're more of just a Tom Brady fan.
I'm just telling you what my heart told me. It's not that I intellectually decided I'm not going to pay attention to the Penguins after Lemieux. I just found myself when I turned them on in October, like, huh, something's missing here. Oh, my favorite player on the team. Huh, I can't find myself as excited about this. I can feel that dynamic. I would empathize with Patriots fans in 2020 watching it that way.
I would say if they, and again, the hypothetical of Andy Dalton now being a New England Patriot, if Andy Dalton led them on a 13-3 Super Bowl run, the Patriots are lucky in the sense that they won the Super Bowl versus the Falcons, the 28-3, we all know that, and they won the Super Bowl versus the Seahawks with the Malcolm Butler interception. Because let's just say they lost those or they completely blew out the other team. I think a lot of the fans would just like stop caring to an extent. Like, oh, we won so many, who cares? Like, this is not fun anymore. If they had to watch Andy Dalton lead them 13-3 and battle, let's say, the Ravens or battle out the Chiefs or battle out Chargers, whoever team is good, Texans, whoever is like good that year, next year, let's just say, if and they somehow like, you know, just barely by like, you know, an inch squeaked by and they won the Lombardi Trophy with Andy Dalton, I think every Patriots fan who was like kind of like, oh, we've won so many, they'd be like, wow, like we did it with this guy who was pretty league average.
I think that's right. You know what? I guess it kind of comes down to if they win the Super Bowl this year, that and Brady says, oh yeah, I want to play next year.
It's crazy.
That gives it a new look. If the Patriots with Brady playing like this says, I want to be back in there. And Belichick says, I think we can do better. I mean, that reaction, gives you the look. Because, of course, practically, they're playing the Texans on Sunday. If I said to Belichick, straight up, right now, we're making this trade, right now, and you cannot walk out of the room without an answer, Tom Brady for Deshaun Watson, Bill Belichick 100% would do that. I just wonder, would every Patriots fan sign off on that?
No.
I asked Ricky Tamposi.
Yeah.
I asked Ricky Hollywood that same question. She said, no, we gotta die with Tom Brady. That's it.
No, there are a lot of Patriots fans are blockheads, and they just...
Oh, well, you disagree, but that doesn't invalidate. She's the Patriots fan, not you, and you're the one, and she's the one saying no.
I think you take Deshaun Watson in a heartbeat, and you say, are you sure you don't want anything else with that? No other mid-round, no other picks or players? Because it's a total steal, but I think some of those Patriots fans, and maybe the ones you're talking about, that would be upset. They wouldn't care about the Patriots that they won without Tom Brady. The same people that are, they just blinded by their love of him, but I consider them more Tom Brady fanboys than an actual Patriots fan.
I hear you. But yes, I'm saying that's the reality of some of the mindset of some fans. And in fact, not the mindset, rather it's what the heart tells you. That's what I always say, Spaghetti. I can't make these decisions all intellectually. I'm a sports fan. We're all deluded by rooting for what other people are doing. We watch them. That's our role in it. And by the way, again, everybody getting so upset about this. This isn't about you. You happen to have the guy who is this generation, at minimum, this generation's GOAT of pro football. At worst, he just for this generation, if not for all of time, the passing of that torch is fascinating stuff, and it will, whether you want to concede it or not. I'm not trying to knock down Tom Brady or the Patriots. I'm pointing out this is the what's going to be, and I'm fascinated by it as a sports fan of how you deal with that, having sort of been through that myself. One more thing, speaking of sports fan, I happen to be one, and I watched the game in Cincinnati, Queen City. I don't know if you saw that one on Sunday, Spaghetti. Mason Rudolph struggling mightily against the lowly Bengals, a game that the Steelers really, I don't use must win, but a game that they have to have. They basically, I don't know that they can stumble more than once the rest of the way down the stretch here. The one you would circle that they could lose, I guess, if they were to win out, but it's highly improbable when you're not playing a pro-level worthy offense that this team is capable of winning five games the rest of the way. I mean, they're not going to do that, so things would just have to break right. As I said, if they could get the 9 wins, that would be a success for Mike Tomlin at this point. The question is, who do they start? At the time of this recording, still not announced. I can't imagine why Mike Tomlin would run Mason Rudolph out there, except to make a point that I'm not going to be dictated to by the media who I have to start as the quarterback. And I want to, not just that. I could see Tomlin's mindset, being a coach's guy, being a player's guy, saying, I stand with Mason Rudolph. I believe Mason Rudolph's side of the story with Myles Garrett and all of that. And I'm not going to let that influence my decision. But the practical issues are, first of all, Mason Rudolph's just not playing well. That's, I mean, it's as simple as that. Reminder, though, or maybe this will shine a light on something that a lot of people don't seem to want to acknowledge. Duck Hodges is not he's not Andy Dalton either. You know, I was going to say a really good quarterback. He's not a league average quarterback. There's not a quarterback on the Steelers roster that is going to win you games. At this point, don't lose games. And it was on the cusp of Mason Rudolph losing the Steelers the game on Sunday. And I, at that point, said before the half, they need to go to Duck Hodges for a spark, a short-term spark. I don't know ultimately who's the better play in 2020. If, let's say, Roethlisberger, the assumption is his elbow's ready to go, then what do you do? I don't know about all that. I'm just thinking about right now. They have to win this game. They have to survive this Bengals game because division standings, conference standings, that could all come into play come wild card assessment time. So they had to survive that game. And back to the point, the Cardinals, since that's an NFC team, they could lose at the Cardinals if they could somehow theoretically win the rest of their games. But anyway, I think they have to go with Duck here because, one, Mason Rudolph isn't playing well. But two, because of that outside noise, if this week is filled with that the Browns are excited to get Mason Rudolph and Mason Rudolph on top of everything else is now hearing in Pittsburgh, he is in the city of Pittsburgh right now. If he's hearing local media talk about it's got to be Duck Hodges, that's going to get in his head as well. The Browns are going to be making noise that they want Mason Rudolph once they get out onto the field on Sunday, at least. If it's Mason Rudolph out there, imagine the kind of stuff that's going to be shouted in his direction in that game for a guy who's already not playing well. What would you possibly force that? Why would you want to do that? Remove all that from the equation and go with the kid who doesn't have any of that baggage. Mike Tomlin could say, I'm not going to listen to that. I stand by this kid. He's been unfairly attacked by Myles Garrett and Cleveland and random people abroad. I'm not going to let that take this kid down. I'm going with Mason Rudolph because in my book, he deserves it. And I think that I get the spirit of that I'm doing Mason Rudolph this solid as his head coach. I just think you're putting the kid into a tough spot that is ultimately not going to be helpful to him.
I actually would start Mason Rudolph for a number of reasons. It's because, one, it's a rival game for you, you're home. So you start him, and if he plays well and he gets like kind of this confidence, this morale boost back, and the fan base kind of rallies around him, going like, "Yeah, we're beating the hot shot, trash talking Browns." They'd feel great about it. The other thing too is like last week you were without James Conner, who is a very good running back, and you were without Juju Smith-Schuster, who I know hasn't having a great season, but he still commands the respect of your top cornerback to cover him. So putting him in that game down your two best weapons is already hurting him to begin with. So I and the other thing is, it's kind of the same situation that we talked about with like Josh Rosen, is that sometimes you're thrown in these situations, you're not given enough time, you're not given enough pieces around you, and people are quick to judge and people are ready to write the book on you and say you're toast here. Like Rudolph is a rookie quarterback, he's in his getting his first crack to play this year, rather, and he. It's okay if he struggles at points. I'm not one person to say like, oh, you know what? You just lost that game. You got to leave. You got to get out of here. Oh, you're missing your top receiver running back. Well, I don't care. You got to leave anyway. And put in the third stringer. I don't know. I don't like that.
I think that is legitimately what could happen. Here, I completely agree with what you just said, that that's how this could wind up. Mason Rudolph conceivably could never start again. Like this could...
Right.
This could basically be the story of his career right here with the baggage and everything else, whether he deserves that or not. So I could see Mike Tomlin being motivated by that. I just think that the better spot for him mentally and otherwise for Mason Rudolph's sake would be to go with Duck Hodges here. And again, understanding Duck Hodges is a backup as a free agent, small guy who is not, does not seem to the high end for him does not seem to be hoisting the Lombardi trophy at the end of this season or any other. There's a chance that if Duck Hodges struggles, that then you would say, okay, now we go with Mason Rudolph, and you're putting him in a position to be potential hero there. And that would completely flip the script and be helpful to Mason Rudolph more so than jamming him into a spot where the guy, those Browns are going to be out to get him. They're undoubtedly, and they're just going to be a world of pressure. And forget it's even before you get to the Brown side of things. Internally, he has to understand the fans, the local media, and most importantly, his teammates probably want to see Duck Hodges. So why are you going to force that? I don't understand it. And hopefully it's all moot because I assume Tomlin will make the right choice here and go with Duck Hodges.
Seems that way. But I still think if they come out hot and they score a bunch of points and they have a nice lead over the Browns and the crowd's rallying behind them, like, oh, see, Mason, like you could do it. You could still, even with, and I'm not sure, I mean, you'd know more than me what the status right now is of Juju and Connor if they're going to play versus the Browns, because obviously that's a major help. For some reason lately in the NFL, it's like, oh, you get like three or four games to impress the media, and if the people start tweeting negatively about it, they get rid of you, and that's that. And it's like, not every quarterback has to be Aaron Rodgers. It's okay if a quarterback is middle of the pack, and that means like kind of like in a Jared Goff situation where it's like you have to have a great O-line, you have to have a really good running back, you have to have a bunch of targets, and have to have a coach who's competent. And then once you have all those pieces, then he could lead your team. And I think certain scenarios, the O-line, you know, it normally should be good for the Steelers, but it hasn't been great in every game, and you have, you know, missing your top receiver and your top running back is never going to help any quarterback out. So I'm more patient with that. Maybe it's because I'm a dumb Giants fan who's seen the last couple of years of Eli, but I just think that you have to, sometimes the perfect scenario is you have to just strive for that and help the quarterback out. It's okay if he is somewhat of a passenger, and especially in a year where you lost Ben Roethlisberger and you never really think it's Super Bowl to begin with, it's like, well, I would just keep riding Mason Rudolph out anyway. It's no point of playing a third stringer who doesn't really have a future in the NFL.
Yeah, I think the bottom line is I now am skeptical enough about both guys that I don't see either one as, I mean, I don't see either guy. We've seen Duck Hodges, you know, play a game plus now, so we don't know anything about him, but he's not certainly, I highly doubt that if the Steelers decide by, you know, on January 1st, like, yeah, Mason Rudolph, I don't think he can do it for us for all of 2020 if Roethlisberger's elbow ain't right. I'm positive they don't think that about Duck Hodges. So, I'm sufficiently skeptical. And, you know, like that could be another aspect of Tomlin's thinking is if we go short term here with Duck Hodges, he's not our answer in 2020, and we don't know what's going on with Roethlisberger's elbow. And short of doing something in free agency or reaching in the draft to get somebody, which, of course, they don't have a first-round pick, I wonder if they feel like, well, we can't throw Mason Rudolph out because he might be our starting quarterback in 2020. I don't know. But I do know that in the here and now, there's no doubt that Duck Hodges has to start again because of, even without the bad performance in Cleveland, right now, what we saw just based on what happened in Queen City on Sunday, you got to roll with Duck Hodges and let him fail before you put Mason Rudolph back in there. Anyway, all right, Spaghetti, let's get out of here because, you know, a lot of people have the whole week off and we don't want to talk too much. And we still have our Wednesday show to do with Handsome Hank Hodgson and Cole Wright and you, Eddie Spaghetti, picking all the Week 13 games for you, some juicy ones on the ledger. So you want to be around for that. The Ravens and Niners getting it on. We'll do Cowboys Bills is a fascinating one. A lot of good ones as we get closer and closer to the wrap of the regular season, then on to January. Both sides of the playoff picture starting to really get exciting too, what those potential matchups in wild card week look like. But anyhow, hope you're having a good week, Thanksgiving week. Make sure you check out Dave's of Thunder Football Fact Check over there on The Athletic, so on and so forth. Back in a couple days. Till then, thanks so much, football fans. Been a thin slice of heaven.